before we even get into the whole episode, I want to say that we acknowledge you. And I want to just take this moment just to say this, Shasha, like, we really do acknowledge the work that you do in the community. I know it took a lot out of you to even get to the place that you're at right now. Mm-hmm. Before we even get into your history and your family tree and your dynamic of who you are, I want to say myself that we acknowledge you. And mm-hmm. I want you to acknowledge you. Yourself, because I know it's hard for people to accept flowers nowadays. Mm. Yeah. And so I want to give you your flowers, because I know you had to go through dark times. There's people that are watching right now that are going through dark times, that are going through issues, that are struggling. We acknowledge you. We acknowledge you.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that you're so transparent and willing to come on here and talk about the things we're about to talk about. So without further ado.
Welcome to Out in the Open Podcast, where discussions are open and judgment closed.
Yes,
hosted
sir.
By me, Jay Mackin.
Safely Andre.
Coach Cherry.
And I'm just Jacob.
And we are
the ICO Crew.
Welcome back to another episode of the Out in the Open Podcast. It's your host, Jay Mackin, and today I'm with my co-host, Alfonso. How you doing, bro?
Yo. We here. But I do want to say again, every time I get on here and speak to you guys, I just want to say we love the support. We love the engagement.
Mm-hmm.
We love the fact that you guys are active and you guys are pushing out our content. Y'all
for
feeling
real.
It. Because mm-hmm. you know, we are most definitely the most talked about podcast.
Yeah, the most talked about. And if you are listening, go in and follow us on IG or ITO Cool Podcast if you haven't already. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, because we dropping mad contents, right, Funza?
Big facts,
man. They ain't ready, and plus we have a vlog coming in. Hey, man, I don't think you guys are ready, man.
They
really not. But we like Funza said, we appreciate you guys again for everything that you guys do, like watching our content, you know, supporting, you know, reposting everything. You know, if you guys been here since day one, hey, big shout out to you guys. And for those who are coming, hey, we appreciate you guys. So, man, for today's episode, wait, hold on.
I was about to say,
hold on. Big shout out to Jekyll and Eve, man. Right now, they
in a whole nother city.
A whole nother city, man, like Tampa, man. And they actually I have an interview over there with this guy. So really excited for that.
Yeah. We got some crazy content coming in for everybody here. Man,
it's crazy how
we're not stopping. Like
for real.
It's we're really serious about this. And I know that you guys are feeling it. So mm-hmm. we're not gonna stop.
For real.
We're not gonna stop.
It's crazy how like we both are recording at the same time. And they're right. over there and we're over here and we're still dropping content, man. But let's get straight to the episode, man. So today, Funzo, you want to do the honor, man?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
How can I even say this? Because when I was driving here, I'm just like, man, we have like history.
Yeah. Mm.
We go way back. Like, I'm talking about like not even middle school type vibe, like way back. Because I don't know, like when I seen you the first time ever, like you family type vibe.
Absolutely.
And I want to just say, before we even get into the whole episode, I want to say that we acknowledge you. And I want to just take this moment just to say this, Shasha, like we really do acknowledge the work that you do in the community. I know it took a lot out of you to even get to the place that you're at right now. Mm-hmm. Before we even get into your history and your family tree and your dynamic of who you are, I want to say myself that we acknowledge you. Mm-hmm. And I want you to acknowledge
you.
Yourself, because I know it's hard for people to accept flowers nowadays.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so I want to give you your flowers, because I know you had to go through dark times. There's people that are watching right now that are going through dark times, mm-hmm. that are going through issues, that are struggling. We acknowledge you. We acknowledge you.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that you're so transparent and willing to come on here and talk about the things we're about to talk about. So without further ado, we have Shasha in the building.
Yes, sir.
First, let them know your real name.
Wait, before I do that, first and foremost, I just want to thank you guys for granting me this opportunity.
Of course,
like
of course.
Like said, we go way back. Like,
way back.
We're talking about like elementary.
Facts.
Not only that, but you guys are doing God's work. You guys are, you know, I'm extremely proud of you guys. You guys are definitely opening a lot of eyes and just making things more known in our community. So thanks. Yeah, big shout out to you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
As far as my name, I love to go by Sha. But you guys want it in English or Creole?
They're both.
Both. Okay.
Yes,
sir.
First name.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so my name is Schnadlin.
Yes. That's a Haitian one.
Very Haitian. And in English, it's Schneidlin. Ask me, why is it pronounced that way? I have no
idea. That's really pretty, though.
I know. So my name is part German. Yeah.
Wait, what? How did that work?
So basically, I was named after my older brother, Schneider. And Schneider's a German name, so yeah.
So wait, your mom, your dad knew about like German type names, or
actually, my dad.
German?
No, my dad is not German.
Yeah, you see her face.
That's his thing. Like, he's so into like the German culture, so yeah, he named me Schneider, and then my mom named me after my brother.
What?
Yeah. That's really interesting.
We already into your history right now. So is it something like your dad is like into history, or he loved just German?
He just liked the German culture, like the movies, the music. So that's just his thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Shout out to Pops.
Big shout out.
So in regards to your family dynamic, you were raised by your mom mainly, or your dad, or both?
Correct. So I grew up in a single parent household, but my father was and still is very active in my life.
Okay, so yeah. Is it because of the fact of like income that he was kind of in and out? What was the reason behind
that? So they basically just didn't work out. So I think when I was around 2 years old, they just, you know, part ways, but they have a very healthy cordial relationship, which makes it a lot easier for me growing up.
Oh, wow. So he was real active even as a young age?
Yes.
What? So, like, did you find it weird, or did you understand it at that age, around that time?
No, because, of course, too, don't remember much.
Right.
But, you know, as I got older, I understand the dynamic, and I respect it because they put themselves last, just put me first. So, with that being said, there wasn't any confusion. Everything was pretty much smooth, but yet transparent.
At the same time?
At the same time.
So it was just you and your older brother?
So actually, on my dad's side, I have 3 siblings, and on my mom's side, it's just me and my sister. So I'm the only girl on my dad's side. And
oh, wow. You're the princess.
I am the princess.
Oh, wow. So is it weird that you have like separate families, or you guys are like really close?
We're really close. I know this is going to sound a little weird, but like, all of my siblings, we don't have the same mom and dad. Like, I don't have an actual full sibling. But it's weird for me to say, oh, that's my half-sister, that's my half-brother. No, you're my brother, you're my brother. You're my sister, you're my sister.
Yeah.
So we have a very close-knit bond.
Are you the youngest?
So I am the youngest on my mom's side. And I am the second oldest on my dad's side. So
that's a crazy blend. But it's like you're the only daughter that he has.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm special on both sides.
That's crazy. Yeah. So do they feel some type of way when you was growing up, like in the household? Did you get like special treatment because of that?
I wouldn't say necessarily special treatment. I would just say that because I am the only girl on my dad's side.
Yeah.
I just had more open opportunities and privilege, I should say.
What?
Yeah.
Was your dad strict?
Very laid back, very cool. My mom, on the other hand, is strict.
Why do you say that?
Not only that, like, okay, single mother, 2 kids, just trying to make sure that she's raising her daughters right. You know, of course, I didn't have any success in relationships, so she just trying to instill what it is to be a person that feels complete and whole, but, you know, not disregarding the fact that, okay, this is your dynamic, this is your history, but I want to make sure that you know who you are, and when people are talking to you, you know how to define who you are to others.
Whew, that's good.
Yeah.
So she was like, she was kind of like nurturing you in that way?
Absolutely.
Like, as far as upbringing?
Yes. Very affectionate, very loving. I'm blessed to have that opportunity to know what it is to be in an affectionate, you know, upbringing, like household.
So like in elementary and like middle school, were you the type to like have it where if someone told you like you ugly, you didn't even like... you didn't even like even listen to them because of the way that your mom brought you out of the world.
Don't get me wrong. She did her best yeah. when it comes to affection. But you know, like growing up, you have bullies.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there are. And, yeah.
And I was always the chubbier kid yeah. in elementary school. And I don't know if you remember, but at West Oaks, at one point in time,
yeah.
during fourth grade year, I was wearing uniform like that whole school year. So I used to get picked on for only being the only person to wear uniform. And of course, being the chubbier kid. So it kind of like interfered my way of thinking. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it made me more mindful of who am I as a person, as far as just like, okay, you're always going to be to something for somebody. So just live in the moment and just accept who you are.
So wait, they made you feel some type of way because of the fact that you were wearing a uniform every day?
Wearing the uniform and just being the chubbier kid.
So how did you deal with it at that time? Like, what did you do?
At that time, of course, I would just tell my mom about it. And she, of course, she, you know, affirm and reassure me like, you're beautiful. You're mm-hmm. this, you're that. But, you know, hearing it on the day-to-day basis, it's just kind of gets annoying. You know, you just kind of want to stop or put a pause to it.
Yeah.
That's because I remember when I was getting bullied, and I think it's because of the way that you were brought up. But for me, when I was getting bullied, or it could be because I'm a guy. I don't know, Mikey, you could probably interject on that, too.
Yeah.
But for me, when I would get bullied, I wouldn't even tell my mom. Mm. And I feel like when it did happen, I would only tell like my cousins. Mm. But I would never tell my mom. It may be because I don't want her to react in a way that she has to step in for me. Mm. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So is it because your mom was already up like super, you guys were super close and she always used to affirm you that you were comfortable talking to her about certain stuff like that?
Absolutely. To this day, like I'm so comfortable talking to my mom. Like that's my homegirl.
That is my homegirl. Shout out to moms. That's what's
my homegirl. I'm very transparent with her, very honest. Still trying to work out and figure out boundaries, because you know the older yeah. you get, mm-hmm. you're still their baby, you're still their private.
What?
Joy,
so there's so. Boundaries for you?
Absolutely.
What we like what would boundaries. Be what would be one?
A perfect example is, you know, okay, once again, growing up in the Haitian culture,
yeah.
you know the three famous L's. So now that I'm no longer living with my mom, it's just that, okay, I deserve for la kind.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, mommy, she's.
I understand, I respect you. You already raised me. I cannot be raised anymore.
That's a tough convo.
Exactly. So I know that you're concerned about my safety, but I will let you know when I get home. And if you don't hear me that night, you'll hear me the next morning.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Haitian parents don't play with that, man.
Yeah.
Even when you get to like 30, 40 years old, man, they're still going to treat you like, they're going to be like, hey, make sure you get home on time.
Yeah, still their baby.
That's crazy. I don't even think that's just like a Haitian thing. I think it's like a culture thing. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say mm-hmm. that.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think that your mom would do that even when you got a house.
Yeah, she... You gotta remember, I'm the youngest.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So the baby leaving the nest is just like, okay, what I'm gonna do now? You know?
So they feel like you're not ready? So they feel like you're not ready yet?
Ready for what exactly?
Yeah, to be on your own.
Mm.
When, are we talking about when I was in the process of like leaving?
Yeah, in the process.
Yeah, it was a huge adjustment. You know, like I said before, me and my mom were really close. So in a sense, it sounds weird. In a sense, it was kind of like I'm losing myself in a sense. Although we're still like, we're only like 20 minutes up the road from each other.
Yeah.
But it's the, once again, the dynamic was different. It was shifted. It's just me on my own and solely on my own.
That's a big leap of faith.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that, especially about the buying the house process. Mm-hmm. So what was the dynamic with your siblings in like middle school and high school?
So fun fact, all of my siblings are either 8 or 10 years apart.
What?
Yeah. Wow. So although we were very close knit, there's a huge age gap. So at one point in time, I was alone, really.
What, like during middle school and high school?
Middle school and high school, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was alone. But, you know, still had a healthy form of communicating with my sibling. It's just that I was home alone. Like, there was no other siblings around me. Of course, my sister, who's 8 years older than me, was already in college. And, of course, my brother, who's 10 years older than me, doing his thing. And then my two younger siblings who live with my father. So, yeah.
So, did, like, when it was, like, during the holidays, did you really guys connect in a deeper level as far as the age gap?
Yeah, so when the holidays would come by, like, I would just kind of switch holidays. So there's sometimes I'll be spending time with my dad, and there's sometimes I'll be spending time with my mom. So
how did that make you feel at that time?
I guess because I was so, like, accustomed to it. Like, it was brought to me at such an early age. It really didn't bother me. It really didn't have a huge effect.
Yes. So. That's good. I mean, I feel like your past really shows, like, who you are now. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like you got a lot of, like, pieces from your mom as far as upbringing?
Yes. My mom and my father, especially my mom, because, you know, that was the primary.
That's your homie. That's like you said. That's good.
Yeah.
So what was it like with you in high school? Did you figure out, like, what you wanted at that moment in high school?
No.
High school was lit.
High school was lit.
High school was lit.
No. Honestly speaking, I really didn't know what I wanted. I was just kind of, like, going through the motions and just living in the moment and just making sure that everything was on point. And we're going to get into that a little bit as far as, like, what, like, compelled me into mental health.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's just say, in a nutshell, I was just so focused on one thing and one thing only. And it showed me what was, like, what is my purpose? What is my calling in that moment? I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Wait, so what kind of, okay, this probably will help me understand a little more. What kind of pressures did you have in high school?
So I wouldn't say I have peer pressure, but I would just say, like, once again, dynamic, like, family dynamic, that alone was a pressure. You know, just the simple fact that, once again, my mom, a single mother of two, and my father, who's have his own family on the side, is just, like, naturally, I felt like I had to make up for all the lost times or all the lost opportunities that they didn't have, especially being the youngest and the only daughter.
Wow. So that was a lot of weight basically on you.
Yeah.
Did they kind of, like, make you feel like you needed to do something though?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. They, of course, they expected good grades. They expected, you know, me to excel in a lot of things that I was, you know, a part of. They never really expressed, oh, you should do this, you should do that. I just felt like it's my, I don't want to say obligation, but I felt like I had to make up for all the things that they didn't have the chance to do.
So in a way, like, so you felt like you owe that to them.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Did they ever kind of, like, say that you didn't need to do that? Did you ever express it to them that you felt like that at that time in high school?
Oh, no, I didn't. Because I feel, knowing my parents, they would be saying, like, there's no need for you to feel that way. We just want you to be happy. We just want to make sure that you're accomplishing the things that you want to accomplish. Knowing my parents, like, they would kind of, like, discourage me not to feel that way. But I choose to not have that conversation with them because I don't want them to feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they want, you know, that you, they want you to be more than what you. Okay. Yeah. So, like, at that moment when you're trying to, like, do everything in your power to make sure that you give this, like, standard for your parents, did it kind of make you, like, struggle in certain parts of school?
Absolutely. And just to be a little transparent,
this is what we all about.
Thanks. Go ahead. Let it out.
So, like, I remember, like, in high school, I was having a hard time passing the FGAT. Now they call it FSA, if I'm mistaken.
You ain't the only one.
Oh, yeah, the FSA. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Extremely hard time passing the FGAT. And that itself took a toll on me mentally. So imagine you in the 11th grade and you're in a reading class. That don't feel too good.
Mm.
It doesn't.
That's facts.
So I remember like as if this happened yesterday. I never really passed the FCAT. I ended up passing the ACT, which helped me graduate high school.
No way.
I'm so serious.
Even like that final one that they had gave us?
I never passed the FCAT. I passed the ACT.
I remember they were doing that. Like, was that the first year they started like accepting that instead of?
Yeah.
I think I remember that. What?
Yeah.
No, I can relate to that too. That's the same thing that happened to me.
Yeah. For real?
I couldn't pass the FCAT or the FSA. I think it was too hard, man.
I don't know. I didn't like it at all. Like, I passed it on the last time, but I hated when it was from the paper version and then they had it on the computer.
Yeah.
I don't like the format. They put too much pressure.
You do.
It was super stressful. So I can actually agree to you on that one because I was struggling. I was still in. I think I was probably still in trying to pass the FCAT, like I think up until senior year. Honestly, yeah. I think so, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Real. Yeah, that was a lot of pressure.
No, seriously, the struggle is real. Like imagine you in 11th or 12th grade and you're in a class full of freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel good. And you have a lot of self-doubt just by thinking like, dang, I can't pass a simple test.
Yes.
Quote unquote. And you feel like that test define your intelligence.
That's true. And it was so bad for me for the FCAT that I stayed back third grade.
Mm.
I stayed back. Like it was that bad. Like I remember I was in third grade. I remember I had all, this was like all my class, like class of, I would have been class of 2013. So I remember like all the kids passing.
Mm.
And I had to go and tell my mom that I didn't pass. And at that point, my mom was kind of like your mom. Like she was very reassuring and giving me confirmation and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like I told her and I was crying. I'm like, man, I feel stupid.
Mm.
Like, I'm dumb. Like, that's how I felt.
Look.
And then I even went to, like, summer school and failed it, too.
Yeah, I remember summer school, man.
It's hard. The education system is hard, but yet tricky.
It is.
It is. And it's so funny you said that you stay back. Actually, I stayed back in the second grade.
For the FCAT?
I was supposed to graduate in 2013 as well.
What?
It wasn't for the FCAT. I stayed back in second grade because the way I learn, like the way I process, it's not like up to par compared to like my classmates. So I wasn't doing too well and my grades was not on point. So the best thing they could do for me at that moment in time is for me to repeat the second grade.
And you didn't know nothing about it, right? At that time, even though like you seen your friends leave and stuff.
I had a feeling because I remember literally in second grade year struggling, just trying to do my absolute best. Like my teacher literally lost all hopes and was like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine like to this day, it's stuck with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't ever like, yeah. Actually, I remember there was a time where I don't know if they still do it now is like they would give, cause I remember this girl named Angie. You know, Angie,
she's like Indu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember.
So like, She had stayed back, I believe, but she had took a different test that showed that she was able to like go to the next grade. Yeah.
What
so
test
like,
was that?
What happened?
I said, what test was that?
I don't know. I don't remember it, but I remember she telling me that and I was like, what? And I'm stuck here. But in regards to being in the second grade and that happening, do you feel like what happened, like what took place made you a better person at the end of the day?
Yes. What if I told you that itself is a small factor of my why?
Mm.
Yeah.
Second grade you.
Second grade me. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So did you, as you got older, did you realize like over time, like I stayed back and now I really want to pass this? The FCAT, did you already kind of like put that on you? Like I have to pass it no matter what?
Yes, I put that pressure on myself. But at the same time, I had this constant thought that like I have to prove myself. I have to prove myself. When I say I have to prove myself, I'm talking about second grade me. I have to prove myself. I have to prove myself.
Mm.
That's what's like, it was just like on repeat.
So what did you do when you was constantly failing it?
So when I stayed back in the second grade, I just started going ham. And of course, that's with the help of my mom, my sister, my aunt. They just made it a routine and gave me structure as far as like my like learning, how I learned, the ability to, you know, grasp certain things.
So how do you learn? Like, what's your ways of learning?
Just
especially for like, this could be for anybody, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like we're having a conversation. We're keeping it out in the open. So for a person that may be struggling, it don't have to be necessarily in second grade. It may be in fifth, third, whichever age group. What helped you out with that part?
So, and I also forgot my cousin too.
Big shout out.
Big shout out.
Shout out to you. They just made it fun. Yeah. I have a thing where if it's boring, I'm not going to touch it, look at it. If it's not given, I'm sorry. I'm putting you down.
Oh, snap. Yeah. So like text and all that, it has to be like active.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So they made it fun. Like they would like make it into a board game, or would just simply just make a song out of the material. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I never thought about doing that though.
Yeah.
And it helped.
It helps. Actually, I'm in the process of studying to become licensed.
You will be.
You will.
In that atmosphere.
So with me studying now, I just kind of like, once again, I can't do the whole textbook thing. So I just simply go on like YouTube, play the music in the background. I can't study when it's complete silence. I know that's weird.
Really?
I cannot.
I know a few people that are like that.
And I just try to make it fun. I try to make it engaging, because if not, I'll just simply disconnect. Yeah.
And not even try after that?
Nope. That's just me being honest with myself.
And it's good that you know yourself though, because a lot of people still to this day, they struggle with how to learn and how to like be productive. Because a lot of times people will make it where it's like, oh yeah, I can't really do this. It's not even for me. But you're resilient because you're finding a different way to actually learn it. So it's good. Because I know when I played instruments, I can only play it by ear. That's how I learned how to play music. I can't read it, but it doesn't mean that I'm not a musician.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying?
Because the thing with me, till this day, I still can't read.
And you still play?
Yeah, I still play. Like, if you send me a song, I'll listen to it a couple times. And when the day comes, I'll play it exactly like that.
See? And I think a lot of people get that idea like, okay, if it has to be one way to do something, then that's the only way. And I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And you're an example of that. Mm-hmm. So going back to like your high school days, after you like passed, not even the FCAT, but as far as passing, how did that feel?
Like, I felt so excited. I felt relief. I felt rejuvenated in a sense. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, I just felt like renewed. Like, I'm just like, okay, now I get to move on to the next chapter. Yeah.
That was a big thing.
That was a big thing for me.
So when you did that, did you tell anybody like as far as how it made you feel not passing the FCAT and going through that process? Did you eventually tell your parents?
Well, my parents knew from the get-go, like from the jump. It's just as far as like my peers who did pass the FCAT, it was a little embarrassing to share because it brought me back to that place in second grade. Yeah.
So that was a tough conversation to have with them.
It was a very tough conversation.
But they were excited when you passed it and everything, right?
And the night that I found out, I was actually at Evan's homecoming.
What you was doing over there?
She was partying.
Just getting it. And I remember because I was with some of my friends and my mom called me. It was literally like 9, 10 o'clock. My mom called me. And you know, normally my mom doesn't open my mail. She don't. But when she saw
that's different. You sure your mom Haitian?
I was about to say that.
So she's very Americanized.
Oh, she's Americanized? Okay.
Very Americanized.
No wonder she be talking to you how she be talking to you.
Right.
But yet still Haitian.
Facts.
Americanized, but yet still Haitian.
Facts.
And when she saw like the letter from the ACT, she was like, Fomouvel. And I'm just like, okay, mommy, Mouvel. She's like, whoa, you pass it. I was so
happy. And it was at the right part. Like, you can still, it's all right. She gets to celebrate.
Yes. I was like, no, like that was a true celebration for me. And it just happened at the perfect time.
So at that point, were you not thinking about like the next step? Or were you just in the motion of like, okay, now I'm good. I can enjoy like the rest of the couple of months in high school? Mm-hmm. Or was it like, now I'm on the next thing?
I was embracing the moment.
That's good.
I didn't want to rush it. Like, I just really want to embrace the moment because I knew how much I was struggling mentally. So I just lived in the moment.
And that helped a lot?
That helped so much.
So how long did you take to like now start thinking about like your next move?
So I want to say like within the last 3 months of senior year, that's when I started to like, okay, let me start applying for, you know, college and see where this goes.
Was your friends already ahead of that point as far as looking into college?
It was 50-50. Some were still kind of like, you know, just chilling. Some were already like...
Already there.
What's that program Valencia used to offer?
The Bridge
program. Oh,
yeah. I remember that.
That didn't save me, too.
Yeah.
Shout outs to the Bridge of Success.
Yeah.
So what were your options in high school? I mean, in high school, what were your options that you were looking into?
I just wanted to start school. And it's so funny. I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't know. Like, you know, like when you have conversation with your friends, you say, yeah. Oh, I want to be a physical therapist. I want to be a veterinarian. Like, mm-hmm. when they ask me, I'm like, blank crickets or like.
Why do you think that was? Was it too much options?
I think it was just simply just still trying to figure out who am I as a person, especially struggling with the thought of me not feeling good enough because of a test and me constantly playing in my head, like, you got to prove yourself. You got to prove yourself. You got to prove yourself. But while saying that, I was kind of like somewhat stagnant in a sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you, it was at the point where you just had so much that you just didn't even want to participate in the next move.
Yeah.
So like that point, did it change your mind into saying like school is for you, or you already knew that I'm just going to go and I'll figure it out then?
I'm just going to go and figure it out then. Look, I'm just... Lord take.
So what college did you go to at first?
I went to Valencia.
Shout outs. Oh, you know they Pumas now, I think. Really? They got a mascot.
Puma?
Yeah, shout outs to Valencia. They got a mascot now. So that may open up the door for sports. But anyways, so you went to Valencia, and how did that make you feel getting into college?
I'm just like, okay, this is it. This is a new chapter in my life to adulthood. In a sense.
Whoa, you felt like it was adulthood?
Yes.
Why?
Because I feel like this is the moment where you take your life and make something of it. Although like college doesn't necessarily define you or your future. As long as you have a plan and it's an effective plan, you should be good. But I feel like at that moment in time, like, okay, like this where the big dogs is at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about your parents? Because, you know, as... raising in a Haitian household and, you know, the concept going to college, did they give you advice on which career to go to? You know, like Haitians be like, yo, you need to be a doctor or you need to be a lawyer, you know, things like that. Did you get that pressure from them?
So, as mentioned before, my mom is very Americanized. My dad is very laid back. So I didn't get that like, for doctor. I didn't get that. But they would ask me, okay, what are you going to school for?
That's good.
And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just going for my AA, general course class. Hey. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because they were trying to like, even though they didn't tell me what to do, they were just like, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?
Mm-hmm.
And coming from a family who is heavily in the medical field, they was like, oh, put yourself, wap on sit there, nurse. I'm just like,
LPN.
No, it's just not giving. It's so weird how I, you know, find my purpose and or calling. So as mentioned before, I was going in for my AA, right?
Yeah.
And at that time I was I was working at McDonald's. Then I had the opportunity to leave McDonald's to do work study in the orientation department.
What, at Valencia?
At Valencia.
Okay.
So that gave me an opportunity to connect with more people. And my supervisor at the time was asking me, do you know what you want to do? And I'm like, no. But I just know, and I know this is a general like statement. I want to help people. Like,
yeah.
Anything that you do, really, you help other people.
Right.
But I just like, I just want to help people. And I know I'm good with people. I know that I'm a good listener, but I don't know how I can make that into a career. She was like, why don't you just go to the career center and take that test.
That's what they hit you with.
I was like, okay, you know, let me just go for it. So I went to the career center, took the test, and one of the career options was social work. And I was like, So I didn't want to jump the gun. What I did was I connected with my supervisor and she was like, hey, I know a social worker. You can probably shadow whenever you're ready. Let me know. And I can connect you with her so you can see how it is, like learn all the ins and outs. And I said, okay, perfect.
Whoa. So why didn't you jump the gun? Why?
Because I didn't want to make a irrational decision and regret it later.
Wow.
Yeah. That was good.
It is good.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why I asked that, because a lot of times like we'll just go for it, like, yeah, or like we'll just do our side research and then we go. Right. But you took like an extra step and actually wanted a shadow. That's really unique.
Yeah.
So you ended up doing that?
Yeah. And I loved it. Like just seeing the passion that was being, you know, portrayed and just caring for, you know, her clients. I'm just like, wow, like I can see myself doing this, you know, because I personally feel like I have like a nurturing, caring aura.
Yeah.
So I was like, I like this. Let me check it out. So, of course, I finished, you know, my AA.
And big shout outs.
Big shout out. UCF Direct Connect.
Yes. Big shout out.
So I applied for to be in the BSW program. So that's Bachelor's in Social Work program. And I just continue on and learning materials. Like I gained a love for it. Like I learned to love it. It kind of happened so natural, but yet I was mindful.
What were you doing, like, aside from school? Like, was it something that was a component to social work that made it so natural for you, or was it just the process?
I feel like this is going to sound crazy, but I feel like I've been social working, even though that's not a word. Like,
it is now.
since the beginning.
Like second grade, you type vibe? Like
I'm talking third, about fourth? Like just personality wise.
Oh, it was in you.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's because you realize that after you, like when you are in the career.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it was like destined.
Yeah, it was made for me.
I know that's right. Y'all hear that? It was made for her.
Made for me.
That's amazing. So like for you in college, how are you like as far as social wise? No point intended for the social workers. Like how are you socially?
I was focused. Like I was just
book.
I was just like, of course, I only commute to the school. I didn't necessarily involve in the activities that were like, you know, offered at UCF. But when I did, like, I would all find myself in weird situation where random people would just tell me like, this is how they're feeling. This is, you know, what's going on. I'm just like, you know, the materials that I learned at that moment in time in school, I would just apply it. And it was effective.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
and of
amazing.
Course, a little bit of authenticity, you know.
Yeah.
Just being myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like, even though you wasn't even trying to be in that school or that social work setting, it came to you.
Yeah.
On those awkward locations.
Awkward locations.
So how would you like do it? Like, would you step aside? Like, would you take it somewhere else? Would you just be in the moment with the person? Like, how'd that come across?
A lot of the times I just start by saying, hey, how you doing? Like being a extrovert with introvert tendencies, of course.
Okay.
I was just like, hey, how you doing? You know, how you doing? How's your day? I could be at the store or just, you know, be at church. And then just by that alone, the person feels like they're being heard.
Yeah. I ain't gonna lie. You did that to me in a text message. This today, she texted me. She's like, and it's not like a normal like way of like communicating. So I'm like, whoa, like this is deep. Like I feel like she's talking to my soul right now. She just texted me, how are you feeling? I'm like, what? I didn't get like, what are you doing? Or like, she went straight in. I'm like, oh, snap. Yeah. I can't just give her like a small message. You know what I'm saying? I gotta elaborate.
I cannot.
Okay, so that's dope.
If you really think about it, a lot of times, like, and I'm sure you guys can relate, you know, our loved ones, our close friends, sometime when they call us, I would say there's a high percentage they need something. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
Not saying that we don't want to help them, but like sometimes we just want to be seen. We just want to be heard. So it's not, we don't always want to hear, hey, I need this, I need that. We sometimes want to hear, how you doing? How you feeling? Mm-hmm. Like, where you at emotionally? Where you at spiritually, physically? Yeah. Like, is there anything I can do to help and support you? That's all it is. Like, I have a weird tendency. My cousin can vouch for this. I have a weird tendency. I'll just call my cousin just cuz. Like if he's in my spirit, I'm like, hey, I was just calling to see how you doing. How you feeling? I just want to tell you that I love you. That's it.
Need more people like that. Yeah. Right there.
When did you start doing that though? Like checking up on people?
Because of my upbringing, affectionate upbringing, you know, saying I love yous, hugging each other, is just natural for me to do.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
So how were you as far as relationship wise in high school and middle and college?
No relationship. In high school, yeah.
I know. No entertainment, no sidetracks.
You know, to talk to somebody here and there.
For real?
Yeah. But once again, like I said, I was just so focused on just proving myself and just trying to accomplish that goal at that moment in time. So, although I would have like, you know, auntie whisper.
Flings. Little small flings.
What they call it? Auntie souffle nos oreilles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was a little entertainment, but it wasn't nothing that I was like pressed on.
Why was that? Is it because the goal was too big or they weren't ready for what you had?
Mm. I feel like my goal was number one.
For real?
Yeah.
Do you think that was a reason like they didn't want to approach you too?
That didn't stop them.
Ooh, okay.
That didn't stop them.
Yeah. Oh, so you would turn them down because of that, or it would get to become a distraction?
I would just like, if it was too much of a distraction, I would just kind of like make it into more of a friendship.
Friend zone.
Even though it wasn't a relationship, like a significant relationship, it was just more like, hey, like my focus is on this.
Drop it like that.
Yeah. And you know, it's not you, it's me. Very right. But my mind is elsewhere. I have a goal and I need to accomplish that goal.
Dang, just like that.
Yeah, I'm like, when I have something I need to accomplish, like I'm on robot mode.
Dang.
Yeah.
Do you think that kind of negatively affect you in certain ways?
I do believe it can be a negative trait because not everybody has the same mindset. So even if I would try to explain it, I don't expect them to understand it.
So how do you deal with people like that? Like that don't understand the reason why you're so focused? Do you kind of like leave them on their own, or like how do you address that?
I just let it naturally flow. If they want to be around,
yeah,
okay. If not, no hard feelings. I understand as well.
So did you keep that energy throughout the whole time that you were in college as far as UCF?
Yeah, just kind of like, once again, just I'm on my grind. I don't want nobody stopping me. I don't want no hiccups, no nothing.
And is it because of the second grade you, or was there an instant that you were distracted and it messed you up?
I think just the thought itself, knowing that if I get distracted, is going to put me at a pause. And I don't want to be at a pause. And going back into second grade, I think I also felt like I need to make up for that lost time.
Yeah, you did mention that.
Yeah.
You did mention that. So there was like always like a clock on your mind?
Yeah.
Wow. So did you feel like doing that, it would make you aware of like, hey, I got to graduate at this time type of vibe, or no, you just wanted to finish?
At first, yes, I have to be honest with you. But then again, my mom was like, you know, life is not a race. Everybody path, walk of life is not the same. She loved to say, "Mais tout un temps même gosse."
For y'all don't understand Creole real quick, everybody's hands are not the same. And that's like an analogy, mm-hmm. like everyone's path is different. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's good.
Yeah. Never heard of that before.
That's really good. Yeah. Wow. So with that, I mean, I would have been on go too then. Forget it. Like, I'd have been to the moon with that. Oh, okay. So in regards to actually accomplishing that moment and becoming a graduate for UCF, mm-hmm. how did that feel?
I felt relief because starting UCF, like, you know, finishing my AA, I remember I had a coworker at Valencia who had a sibling that did not graduate from UCF. And she was like, you know what UCF stand for? I'm like, what?
Oh,
you can't
it.
Finish. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, my anxiety was just like, I'm like, mommy, yo te cosa UCF, fini, oh my God, oh my gosh. She's like, I'm like, yes. And she's like, she said, UCF means you can finish. She's like, and I'm just like, what do you mean? She's like, in actuality, I graduated UCF twice for real.
Big facts.
Yeah.
She got the paper too.
Yeah.
Wow. She ain't one of those people that I graduated and I don't got the papers for it. She got the papers for real.
Yeah.
That's major. So at that moment when you did walk across the stage, did that second grade you thank you?
Yes. Yes.
And how did you know? Like, how did you know, like, it was, I did it?
Because I proved myself, even though a lot of the times, naturally, there are moments we doubt ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Next.
So the fact that I was able to accomplish something and, you know, kind of sit back and reflect that moment in time in the second grade when my teacher was like, I don't know what else to do. Like, I figure out what to do.
Yeah.
I figured out on my own. That's of course, good. With the support of my family, friends, and God. But, like, I eventually figured it out.
So did you find out like what position you wanted to be in social work? Because I know social work, it has so much. You
Very
can do
broad.
So much. Yeah, you can do so much with it. So when you did walk across the stage, did you realize like at what point you wanted to take it?
So I knew that I wanted to work with the elderly.
Mm.
It's my story is twisted. Like, it's so twisted. It's going to be very complex. So I remember during undergrad, I did an internship at a nursing home for that whole program academic year.
Yeah.
And I liked it, you know, just dealing with the older people, learning their stories, you know, learning a piece of advice, wisdom,
yeah,
all of that. It was very interesting. And I was like, I can see myself doing this, you know, working in a nursing home as a social worker. But then again, once I graduated my bachelor's, I didn't go down that route. I actually became a case manager for a company that basically tend the needs for Hurricane Irma. So it's completely left.
Whoa.
From what I wanted to do.
Wait, was Irma within that same year?
So I graduated in 2018. Hurricane Irma happened in 2017. So there was a funded program through FEMA that offered case management positions to kind of help some of the people who still had, you know, damages around their homes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So you worked with them for quite a while?
I worked with them for 2 years. So it was very interesting. Still kind of social worky. That's not a word, but
yeah.
Still kind of social worky. You know, just going to the client's home, looking at the damages, hearing their stories, how much things that they lost and whatnot. That itself gave me the opportunity to be that comfort, that, you know, sense of peace, that place or environment where they can be vulnerable.
That's where you seen it more with those people that were dealing with Irma, more so than the people that were elderly?
I feel like it was both. But because I wasn't granted the opportunity to work with the elderly after graduated undergrad, I still had the opportunity to apply the skills that I learned and, of course, the skills that are natural to me into that position.
So you felt it was like a smooth transition?
Yeah, it was a smooth transition, even though I didn't expect that transition.
Yeah.
I had another, you know,
mindset,
but it worked out and I enjoyed it, but that wasn't it though.
What made it not it for you?
Because I feel like I was hungry. Like, I was like, I need more.
Yeah, you want it.
I need more.
Was that time still in your head on that point?
Like, no.
So that was done?
It's kind of done. I'm just like, yeah, okay, I need more. So what I did, I went back to school.
While you were doing the IRMA job?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I went back to school.
What pushed you to do that? What pushed you to do that?
That hunger.
Oh, wow.
So you applied?
I applied and I got accepted. But funny thing is, I graduated in 2018, right? With my bachelor's.
Yeah.
2019. No. My bad. Let me backtrack. So, yeah, 2018, I graduated. I want to say a few months after I graduated with my bachelor's, I tried to apply for the master's program and I didn't get accepted.
I know how that feel.
I was so salty.
Wait, so you already had in mind like you wanted to keep going?
Yeah.
So at that point, you just kept it moving?
I just kept it moving. I was just like, no, let me just focus on work. But
did that second grade you come back with that part where you didn't get accepted? Did you feel like that rejection aspect?
I felt like you said, rejection, it sucked. It hurt.
Yes. So how did you deal with it? You just moved on? Just like,
no,
working.
I held on to it. I have to be honest, which is why, of course, we're going to dive into that a little bit.
Yeah.
About, you know, the whole mental health thing. I held on to it.
So even dealing with seniors, dealing with IRMA, that was still on your heart?
Yep.
So
because of the rejection letter.
Wow. So what did you do after that? So you applied again?
I applied again the following year and I got accepted. But, you know, a really good friend of mine, and we're still good friends to this day. She was also interested in going back for her master's, but I kind of like encouraged her, like, let's do this together.
I think I know who you're talking about.
That's my homegirl.
Big shout out to her.
Big shout out to you. That's my social work muse.
Yeah, big shout out.
I was like, let's do this together. So we applied around the same time and she got accepted first. Right.
Oh, before you, like, as far as acceptance letter or email. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I was happy for her, genuinely. But I'm like,
you felt some way. Letter? Yeah.
Because you was the one that was kind of being her encourager.
Where's my letter? Wholeheartedly happy for her. But because of that rejection from the first time I applied, it's that those same thoughts were coming back. Like, am I going to get accepted or not?
Ooh. So you was being very doubtful at that moment.
Yes, very.
So what happened when you did get that letter? Did you?
Man, I hollered. I was like, well, why don't you do it? But yeah. I hollered. I actually cried.
When you seen it?
Yeah.
Did you tell your mom about it?
Yeah, she was so happy.
So she knew about not getting accepted and getting accepted, right?
Like I said,
very transparent.
Homegirl.
Yeah, she
tell her everything.
That's good. So when you did get accepted, did you kind of know like what you wanted to do with it at that part, or you were just like, "No, I'm hungry. I'm just gonna get this."
I'm hungry and I'm gonna get this.
So what did you do after that? You did that robot thing again?
Yeah.
She was on the grind.
It works though. Like
I'm focused.
So
talk to me, don't nothing.
So as far as like the learning aspect, were you still doing it where it's kind of like you have to play by like music, and so you're even in college the same
this day? Like I'm always learning, you know, just informing myself, learning new materials to apply to clients. So till this day, I'm learning, and that's how I learn.
It has
to be interactive, have to be engaging.
That is really good. So you and her both were in the same semester as far as
we graduated the same time with our undergrad. We graduated the same time with
our grad. Mm-hmm. What? So that's bestie.
That's social work.
That's crazy. So how did it feel walking across the stage a second time?
Well,
that was during COVID?
Yes. I didn't walk across the stage. I didn't, but I was still excited. I was just happy that I got that part over. And I just felt like, okay, so let me apply for some new jobs. So I knew I wanted to do some social work because social work is so broad.
Yeah.
I just started applying just different, you know, roles. And I got accepted with this one company.
Wait, how long did it take? Because I'm only reason why I'm asking this because I'm being like a because I'm in that process where I'm about to do the same thing. Because I know it's kind of like it's kind of stressful, like having like that part of your life done and over with. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, okay, now like career wise, like so how long did it take?
So I struggle with anxiety. So being an anxious person, yet very structured.
Yes.
I actually got the job before I graduated. Yeah.
Whoa, so you was in the field before that?
Yeah.
Applying and everything.
I got the job before I graduated and they said that they'll wait for me. Once I graduate, I can start.
So what kind of job was it? Like, what were you doing?
So this job was basically, the position is called clinical assessor. So basically I'm the first point of contact with, you know, just completing biopsychosocial. So biopsychosocial is basically gathering information, learning about their history, learning about any mental illness in their family, were there any substance use, what's the reason why they're coming in for services. So I was basically the first point of contact.
Wait, is it like a hospital, a psychiatric unit?
It's an outpatient mental health clinic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, you knew coming into this that that's what you were going
to
do?
It just came to me. Like I told you before, before graduating, I just started applying. You know, I got the job offer and they say they'll wait for me. And once I got the job, that was my position. I was a clinical assessor.
Wow. So how did that feel doing that?
So
I know that's heavy. That's heavy right there.
Ooh, heavy. It was all new to me because I never really thought, you know, focus on the mental health
component
side of social work. So just hearing like the abuse, the trauma, it was just like I felt like I was experiencing secondary trauma, secondary, like, you know, experiences just by talking through them. I had to learn how to separate the two. I had to learn, you know, not to take it personally, but still provide that, you know, empathy, still provide that, you know, normalizing their feelings.
Yes.
That extended emotional support.
So that's how you kind of distinguish the two?
Yeah.
So did you happen to have like moments where you took work home? Like not job people, like we're not talking about physical documents or nothing like that. As far as the mindset, like you said, the trauma, the secondhand trauma, were you taking that home with you as well? And how did you deal with it if you did?
So it was a remote position. So yeah.
So you in the same boat as that? Like right now? Okay.
It was a remote position. So once I slammed that laptop, if I get up at 5, that's it. That's a form of self-care, really. To answer your question, yes, in the beginning, I took it with me. I remember the very first few months, like I was crying just hearing some of this. Yeah. I went to my mom. I was like, Mom, like, how can some parents treat their child this way? How can they this? How can they that? I was just asking so much question. And my mom was like, you can't take that stuff with you. Like, you have to understand not everybody's upbringing is like not same. Like yours. Facts. It's not the same.
That's facts.
I'm like, I asked myself, like, you know, a parent's supposed to love and cherish and, you know, just create cherishable moments with the child. But some of these people, they're explaining to me like it's sad they can't stand their parents. Some of them say like they wish their parents was gone. Like it goes deep.
Yeah.
It goes deep.
So how did you wake up and separate it? Like what did you just keep doing like trials and error, or is it something that you learned throughout your schooling that you figured out a way?
I feel like my clients taught me how to separate.
Wow. How? What do you mean by that? Yeah.
So in mental health, you know, you give these clients advice as far as what to incorporate to kind of like navigate throughout their day. So I literally, the things that I would tell them, I apply it to my life.
Okay, I see what you're saying. The same solutions that you would offer, you take in.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's really good. So after that part of your life, as far as working there, is that when you found your purpose as far as what you really wanted to do with social work?
Yes. I feel like, okay, it clicks. Weird how like I wanted to be with the elderly, but once I started working with a specific population, I'm just like, yo, like this is mad, like interesting. And this is like, not to toot my horn, but like, I'm good at this.
What was it? What was the group that you're referring to?
So I mainly work with individuals who were like adolescents and young adults.
Okay.
I had like a few like older people here and there, but I mainly had like
youth. Okay. And so, young adults. That's good. Yeah.
So the age range was from 18 or from 15
to from 13 and up, but since they were assigning me clients, I mainly had like teenagers, and like I think the oldest adult I had was 45. Yeah.
Why do you think that was a huge discrepancy as far as the age gap? Like, what do you think shifted you from just like focusing on like this subgroup? Like, what caused that?
That's a really good question.
That's what we do.
So, like, I think because my experience as an intern when I was working in the nursing home, I think that was just like the first exposure. And I just kind of like, I guess I was impressionable at the time.
Yes.
And I was just like, I can see myself doing this. Like, I go home and run with it, you know?
That's good.
But the fact that God placed me in a different, you know, scenario and serving a different population and been with the population for quite some time now, I'm just like, yeah.
So are you doing it now like private too as well?
Yes. So the mental GPA is my side business.
Oh, let's get into that. So for those who don't know, you've created an outlet for social media to kind of respond to mental health. And I think it's a beautiful thing because a lot of times people forget that social media has a huge part, especially in the youth and the people that are so obsessed with it. It's a form of addiction. We need more content like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, that goes full circle as far as acknowledging you. They acknowledge the page as well. So how did that come about, mental GPA? Like, where did that inspire you to do that?
So I want to say a little after I graduated undergrad. This is going to sound weird. So the name mental GPA came about with me and my cousin. Shout out to you again.
Big shout out.
Ephraim. Believe it or not, the mental GPA was supposed to be a podcast name.
Whoa. Wow. Y'all hearing it first right here. For real. I didn't even know that. What?
Yeah. It was supposed to be a podcast name. I knew that I wanted to like give out content and share, but once again, you know, the self-doubt, being hesitant, although I had like a great support system to kind of like, you should do it, like, you know, you're capable. I was just like, not sure. So I had the name Mental GPA for quite some time now. It's, you guys are just knowing about the Mental GPA, but the name itself, it's already been like 2 years now.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
So you've been birthed.
Yeah.
Wow. So what made you push it more now? Like, what caused you to do that? Is because of all your credentials, the feelings that you had during that time of actually placing it on there and stuff?
I feel like God put me in a position where he was like, you need to think bigger. You have a gift, put it out there. Why are you just keeping it sealed in a box just for work?
That's deep. That's,
yeah, that is deep. So what for, like, was it something that God like whispered to you, or was it something that he kept showing you, like mental GPA?
He kept showing me. You know how like sometimes when you're in a position and you're hesitant, but like there's so many signs just throwing at you like, you need to do it or else. So that's just me being obedient.
That's good.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, like, so what does mental GPA consist of? Like?
The mental GPA stands for growth, peace, and acceptance.
Let's go.
You know, and this might sound a little biased. It's open to everyone.
Yeah.
But my main focus is to break the stigmatization, especially in our community. When I say our community, I'm talking about the Haitian and or Black community.
Yeah. And what is that? What is that stigma? Because I know it personally, but what is that for those who
we
don't know?
We have a tendency where we sweep things underneath the rug and we say, oh, I'm not sick. I'm not crazy. Why I need to go to therapy? Like,
yeah.
And we need it. Like,
yeah, especially we suppress
a lot of emotions.
That is true. And there are some questions that I have written down here that I really wanted you to talk about. But before we even get to that, a fascinating thing that I realized that kind of gave me goosebumps is the same way that you're learning, like the way that you learn, like the videos, the sounds, is the same way that you're educating.
Yes.
Because she be on that Instagram dancing, like she be putting up facts and stuff. So
yes.
Did you notice that yourself, or you kind of had it in mind, like the way I learn is the way y'all gonna learn?
I want it to be authentic. I want it to be real. I didn't want it to sound mechanical. And like you said, like that's how I learned. So imagine people scrolling on their feed and they see that type of like engagement. They're going to want to read. They're going to want to learn more.
Yeah. You connect.
Yeah.
That's good. And do you do that with your clients as well? Like the same way that you kind of do it as well? Do you kind of, because of that age range too?
Yeah. Oh yeah, most definitely. Like outside of work, I'm more in tune with myself. I'm more like comfortable, but like with work, of course, there's certain protocols.
Yeah.
It can't be too, but with my side business, like I'm a goofball. Like I make my clients laugh.
Yeah.
I make my clients laugh, but yet I still make them become aware of some of their thoughts, emotions, and behaviors and how it came about.
That's crazy. I love that you stepped aside and realized God is telling me to be obedient to chase this, but also I'm going to go ahead and pursue this as well to get like give in more to the fact that not only are you a Haitian queen, but I want to highlight it for those as well.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Did you tell your parents, your family that this is what you were going to do before it kind of happened?
They were ecstatic. They were happy because they feel like I can do more. Like I can share. I can educate more because they already know who, like they already know me as a person.
Right, right.
So the fact that I get to share bits and pieces of that onto the world, like it's so rewarding and it doesn't feel like work. It don't.
That's always
your passion.
Yeah, it's a passion. That's how we feel with this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it just comes off naturally. So the questions that I had in mind, the first one that just popped in my head is like, how is it like, what's the proper way to deal with depression? What is the proper way?
Well, you have to think about like this. Everybody, depression is not the same. So you can't approach it the same.
Wow.
So
why is that? Why is there a difference?
Like, because you have to understand, like, this is going to sound weird, but history is a factor, your surrounding, just you overall. So you can't approach depression itself the same.
It's case by case.
Case by case.
Wow. See, I think that's another thing that a lot of, like, even in our culture, like, they think it's the same.
It's not.
Wow.
It's not. Like, there's levels to this. So there's there's major depressive disorder, there's mild depression. There's a depression labeled as dysthymia. So basically you feel depressed literally every day, all day. Are you like all year long?
Are you talking about physically or mentally?
It's both on the physical and mental aspect.
That's like on a rare case, or that's like a very...
Some people struggle with dysthymia.
Wow. So is it something as only like medicine can help out with, or you think there's ways to...
When I say they, I'm talking about in mental health.
Yes.
They do encourage, you know, to have psychotropics to help.
What is that?
Medicine.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
The terms,
that
man.
Sounded familiar, low key. I'm like, wait.
I'm so sorry.
Nah, you good.
They do encourage meds to kind of help, you know, balance out, you know, the chemical imbalances. And of course.
Oh, like in your brain.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Because it is like a body thing too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That is deep. Okay, so in regards to depression, do you feel like the way that our community deals with it, do you think it's destructive?
It's very unhealthy. Very. And the reason why I say that, because we're so used to it.
Hmm.
You know, and I like to tell my, I'm sorry, I'm doing this because this is how like I get passionate sometimes.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
for real.
I like to tell my clients, like, you know, everybody's stage in life is different.
Yeah.
We all go through adversity. But the simple fact that depression itself alone, society says it's not acceptable. So because it's not acceptable, we try to be this happy-go-lucky or I'm all right, I'm okay. That's very unhealthy. We're told not to express these negative emotions. I say embrace negative emotions because that's how you learn and grow from them.
How do you effectively do it? Because that was actually my next question, because I don't know if it's only in the Black community, in the Caribbean community. It's not okay for men to cry. Like, you know that statement. Yeah. It's not okay for boys to cry. It's not okay for men to cry. And it's not okay to be weak.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be strong. Like, mm-hmm. you gotta be happy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want you to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how do you be an effective person while being vulnerable? How does that look? Being like a proper way of doing it. Cause some people, they go out of control when they're depressed. They take it to a whole nother level, or mm-hmm. people that are vulnerable, they hide it, but behind closed doors, they're doing extreme stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the proper way, like a healthy way to be depressed and a healthy way to be vulnerable? Like, what does that look like?
Well, a lot of the times, you know, when we're battling with depression, we communicate that with our friends and family, whether it's directly or indirectly.
Ooh.
But the thing is, you know, for someone who, you know, had the opportunity to experience that on a professional level, as far as like talking to clients, sometimes having that unbiased opinion, it's all that they need. You know, just simply being completely transparent, vulnerable, out in the open, they tell you their true thoughts and emotions and feelings. Because they feel like, let's say, for instance, you know, you're my brother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I'm feeling depressed. You see it to the point where I'm having a hard time getting out of bed. I'm not eating the way I'm normally eating. I'm not motivated. You see it.
Yes.
You express it to me. You try your absolute best, right?
Yes.
But I don't know what it is. When a lot of the times when people who are dealing with depression, when they seek professional help, it's like a fresh of air, like a something new.
Mm-hmm.
They're optimistic. They're hopeful.
Yes, yes.
Not saying that they don't get that from their family, but it's just something about the feeling new or seeing something new is just makes you hopeful. It makes you feel like, okay, I'm starting something, and I mean business. You know.
So it's like a different scenery, different environment.
Absolutely.
I know Jayco, he talks about this all the time because he goes to therapy as well. He said one time in one of the episodes, I don't remember, but he was saying like he'd rather talk to a stranger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember
like,
that.
And it doesn't have to be like a professional, but he'll rather talk to a stranger because they won't judge.
Exactly.
Do you think that's another element?
That's exactly what it is. The fact that I'm a stranger, you feel like we're not going to see each other anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. You're not going to tell people my business because we don't know the same people. That's what it is.
That's deep. And you think that's a good way to kind of bring that out of the person effectively to be vulnerable in that way. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are some of the things that you hate about mental health that you wish could change?
The fact that, you know, and we talked about this earlier before starting the podcast, like, yeah, you can't change people. You can't change the scenery. You can't change their situation. And one thing I like to tell my clients is that therapy is kind of like dating. You never know what you're really going to get. You know? So there's some things you're going to like. There's some things you're not going to like. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, you have that power. You have that control. I'm just a passenger, just giving you tips and pointers. So to answer your question, like, in the beginning, I felt like I want to change it and I want this to work.
Soon as, like, right then and there?
Yeah. But the person I've got, they have to do a little bit of legwork. We got to meet somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So you got to, it's a partnership, basically. Yeah. You ever had clients that has so much expectations on having that first point of contact that things are going to change immediately? Or is there like a way that you already tell your clients this is a process? Mm-hmm. So you be upfront with it?
I tell them this is a process. And I try not to give too much advice because I don't want any codependency. Not only that, I can't give you advice on your life if I'm not living in it. Like, you know what you're going through. You know what you're experiencing. I don't want to take that away from you. Like, it just doesn't make sense. It's like you coming to me and tell me, oh, drink this water. And I'm just like, but I already know how to drink this water.
Yeah.
So why are you telling me how to drink this water? So it's going to cripple me. And I'm going to say, hey, Fonso, should I drink this water?
Yeah. So you're getting, like, second guessing yourself.
Yeah. No, the main goal of therapy is to not only realize some of the behaviors, thoughts, and emotions, but to help you make decisions on your own.
So they're coming into it feeling kind of empty or broken or whatever they're going in there for, mm-hmm. but you want them to be kind of independent for themselves.
Absolutely.
Okay. And do you feel like when you do have clients or even people that come in and they kind of switch it on other people, do you kind of bring it back to them, or is it more so whatever's happening, we just address it? Like, how does that go about?
I love that question. I love that question. A lot of the times when someone's coming into therapy, they're telling you about their situation and they're saying, oh, like, my sister is, you know, this, and she don't understand me. She don't know how I'm feeling, this, that, and the third. First, I normalize their feelings. Second, I make them reflect their emotions and what happened during that moment in time. And I also let it be known, like, this is what the other person or the other party may be feeling and why they may react this way.
Yes.
Because sometimes we're very selfish when it comes to our emotions.
That's true.
So a lot of the times when we're in a situation or when we're having, like, a disagreement with somebody else, we don't see their point of view. We just only see our point of view. Mm-hmm. We feel like we're always in the right. And sometimes we need to sit back and reflect, like, what did I do wrong? Like, how can I prevent this? And sometimes it's a simple communication, a miscommunication.
Yeah. Facts.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, a lot of things could be fixed with conversation. Yeah. And I think that's why mental health works so well, is because that's the key component. Like, mm-hmm. you have to talk. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get anything out of it just by standing and looking at the person that you have a feud with or internally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with people that are, like, hard to communicate with? Like, and it doesn't have to be clients, it's just, like, people around you that you care and love for that are fighting, like, an internal battle, and you kind of have that vibe and you feel it, like, there's something going on. Like, how do you kind of address it?
So simple. It's not hard. A simple, I'll just say, you know, where can I meet you in the middle? Like, how do you feel? Like, what are some of the emotions you're feeling? Because a lot of times when people are upset or angry, you know what that means? That's stemming from fear, disappointment, hurt, a lot of different mixed emotions, but it's being portrayed as anger. So I'm asking, what are your internal feelings? What are your internal emotions? Like, what was the triggering point? Like, what was the, not only the triggering point, but what was the body language? Like, I asked a whole bunch of different questions that kind of make them feel like, or think, you know, I felt this way because X, Y, and Z. And it's simple. It could be simple. Like, if you and I have a disagreement.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm upset at you and I can't communicate that. That's an issue. And that can be resolved by using I statements. So let's say, for instance, we're in the house, right? You, my brother, I cooked dishes in the sink and I leave, right? You see the dishes in the sink and you hate that, but you're not saying anything about it. Like, you just letting it slide.
Yeah.
But it irks your nerves. In order to resolve that, you come up to me and say, hey, I appreciate you cooking, you know, food. I appreciate that. But, you know, it makes me uncomfortable seeing the dishes in the sink. How can we, you know, make something work to avoid how I feel and to avoid future escalations or disagreements? So just using simple I communications can go a long way.
That's deep. I ain't gonna lie, I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, she putting us on game, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys are seeing it first.
Yeah, y'all getting the step by steps.
For real.
So what is a day in the life of a mental health professional? What does that look like?
Exhausting, but yet rewarding. Because we're human too. Like, we go through stuff too. Mm-hmm. So like, when you go into a session and, you know, you ask the clients, you know, what are your highs? What are your lows that you face throughout the week? They'll tell you what's going on. And like, deep down, you're like, dang, I'm going through that too, but I can't say nothing.
Mm.
Like, you know.
So who do you go to?
I have my own therapist.
Y'all see that? Y'all see that? Therapist having a therapist. You see that? It's not a bad thing. It's,
no.
See, and that's another stigma that I don't like either.
Yeah.
They make it seem like it's bad.
No.
To seek help. That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. Like, why can't I seek help? And I think that's big on the African community as well. But I don't want you to leave without answering this question here though. Mm-hmm. Like, the process of owning a house. And what age was it again?
I got the house when I was...
Your 20s. We ain't gonna announce no name, but she was in her 20s. 20s, like, this big talk, you know what I'm saying?
Sheesh.
So
yeah.
So let's talk about that, like, that process. Because you was telling me early when we was at church.
Yeah.
Those ideas. So give us the story on that. Like, how did that come about?
I'm going to tell you everything in a nutshell.
Right.
It was very nerve-wracking, but... You know, I felt like this step would not only help me, you know, of course, by investment.
Yes.
But it will also help me. It's just going to sound weird, but like, it helped me with my esteem, not to like show people what I can do, but to be more independent and to be more confident without seeking mommy and daddy help.
Wait, were they kind of like pushing you to like, now you can leave?
No.
It you was just decided
me.
To go.
It was on me.
Was that time thing on there on your head?
Nope.
So it was just you're more at peace in knowing that you can do this?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a leap of faith though.
Yeah.
Not only because why? This is the thing that like blew my mind. She skipped apartment.
She like, went straight to the house.
She had her parents. Like, she could have just chilled another 10 plus years. You know what I'm saying? She went and bought a house and by herself type vibe. So that's remarkable.
It was nerve wracking. I have to be honest, but rewarding.
So now you in the house. You talked about something. I forgot how it goes, but you said
buyer's remorse.
Buyer's remorse. Can you tell the people about that? Like,
so,
what is that?
For a lot of people who are buying homes or who bought a home, they experience buyer's remorse because it's all new to them. It's an adjustment. It's a huge investment. So imagine the financial point of that.
Yes.
So it's just like, what did I just do? Am I I'm not sure about this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, it's almost the inevitable. That's what my realtor told me. Like, you're going to have that little feeling of buyer's remorse once you're done with the, like, the housing process.
That's like, crazy. So how did you kind of like get back to a state of like, I'm glad that I did it for those who are dealing with that?
You know, just simply by prayer, not only that, but just being reminded how far I've came in life. So
that's deep.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you were able to express your story and being able to be authentic and out in the open. And I know Mike, and he has his favorite question he loves to ask all our special guests.
For real. But you've kind of changed that though. Well, actually, Shirley kind of changed that answer. So the question is, where do you see yourself in the next couple months or even a year?
Oh yeah, cause she a therapist. Okay, let's cause I want her input on that too. So like, Shirley, she changed the question for us because Makin, he usually asks in the next 5 years, mm-hmm. and she blew our minds when she said,
"That's fact."
She's like, I really, cause in therapy they teach them to like think about today,
yeah,
be present,
yeah,
and that's one of my goals for this year is just to be more present. And when she said that, it switched the question now. So like, we don't even ask our guests the next 5 years, mm-hmm. just where do you see yourself in a couple months or even in a week? Mm-hmm. So that's why we kind of like changed it up. But you agree to that too as well?
I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Because every day is not the same.
Yeah.
True.
Things are always changing, different seasons in our lives. It's not the same. So constantly your goals should be changing or you should be adjusting your goals.
Ooh, I hear that. Yeah. So what is it looking like right now for you in a couple of weeks or a couple of months?
I'm praying that I pass this exam. Hopefully build a clientele for my side business.
Yes.
Not only that, but who knows? I might branch out into a different area of social work. You never know.
I'm
open, but I know that working with adolescents and young adults has definitely been a great experience for me.
I hear it first right here out in the open.
Yes,
we really do what we say we do and we keep it out in the open. We are definitely the most talked about podcast. We want to appreciate the fact that you took so much of your time. Mm-hmm. So we're giving it back to you because they listening and they watching. And I know they definitely got some jewels that are going to be planted on fertile ground. Mm-hmm. So that way it can enrich not only themselves, but their family. I want a big shout out to the Click House for allowing us to have this space.
Yes, sir.
And this moment with them. And we're going to see y'all in the next podcast.
Well, wait. Before even that, go ahead and give your social media.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
This one was ready to go.
My business social media page is The Mental GPA. My link to schedule for virtual appointments is also there, including my number and email. So if you guys are interested, I'll be waiting for you guys.
Yeah, hey. Short and simple.
Yes,
easy.
Sir.
It's not complex.
Mm-hmm.
Mental GPA. That's it. Y'all heard it and seen it first. Let's go.
All right. As you can see, discussions was open and judgment was closed. Make sure you check us out in the next episode.
And make sure to like,
comment,
and subscribe.